Hey guys.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. It looks like it's going to be a nice, intimate meeting with close discussions.
Yep, and thanks for joining us, like already mentioned. And this is the whole point is that this is a casual meetup, like the description said. We will have statements on there, and hopefully we will have interactive discussion. And you can challenge Microsoft, that's why I'm here. That's why he asked me to join, probably. So there's a Microsoft employee as your target. And then he's representing the MVP and the community side of the story.
So the meetup format, there's about 10 meetup meetings at Ignite. It is literally to mingle with the crowd, as we can use that term.
I'm going to do this.
Yeah, we can walk. Our goal here is to speak to you and to ask questions and to hear your questions and to give inappropriate answers or true answers. You probably know Vesa Jovonen. He is a long-time Microsoft SharePoint Office 365 guy. He's taught me a lot of things, especially in the MCM programs and whatnot. We actually haven't worked together in the field, but that will soon come. And my name is Radi Atanasov. I'm a SharePoint guy. I have a boring job title. It's the least technical job title that I could get. And I'm a technical guy, and I'm pretty hands-on, so please ignore my job title. I am a field guy, so I work with customers out there, and I get my hands dirty quite a lot. I lead a team, or now I lead teams, that deliver work with Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, and so on. We together are part of the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices Group, and Vesa is the leader of that community program and now official Microsoft program, if I could call that. And pretty much Vesa owns a whole lot of stuff, including the entire development communications. Maybe you can introduce it a bit better.
Yes, so, okay, cool. So my name is Vesa Jovonen, like Radi said. He can pronounce that in Finnish, which is fine.
I want to see you translate it.
And I talk English, so hopefully you can understand what I'm actually still saying. but I'm a senior program manager in the SharePoint /OneDrive engineering. It's a pretty weird thing still for me that it's combined SharePoint /OneDrive. I work within the SharePoint side, reporting to Adam Harmetz or that chain. And I'm a pretty weird guy from that perspective that I actually, I'm the only engineer who is remotely from Redmond because I declined to move. So I live in Finland, but I work with the engineering all day, well, typically day-to-day basis. The stuff what I do, like Radi mentioned, is that we run the PMP, the Patterns and Practices for Office 365 and also for SharePoint, which is a community messaging. And that's why I can actually do that. So I can actually remotely. But really key point, what kind of Radi mentioned already, we in engineering, I am actually from the Redmond engineering organization, we want to be much more closer together with the community. We want to understand what is painful for you, we want to understand what's good, we want to get your feedback, and we want all of that to be open, transparent, and hopefully constructive. We know that every now and then, we from engineering, we introduce some functionalities which might be frustrating, so you can be rough with your feedback as well. The key point is get the feedback, because we really, truly want to listen. In the past, there has been kind of a massive barrier between the field and customers and then the engineering. And the fact that I'm moving into the engineering, the Patterns and Practices is now owned by SharePoint Engineering, is really for reducing that barrier and making that communication much more open. And at least now you guys have somebody to ping, hopefully in tech communities or whatever, and follow up on all of those things. And I can then reroute your input back on the engineering, and they actually listen, which is really good. The fact that will changes happen within a matter of months, that's a different thing, because in engineering, things are fought quite a long time, but the input is still taken into account. And we can hopefully address all of that stuff.
Should we maybe just get a feeling of the small crowd here and understand who does what, maybe, just so we can maybe personalize a bit more? Who has heard of Patterns and Practices, the initiative with Office 365? Okay, about majority, 60% of the room. Who is a developer? Yeah, okay. And who is interested to get into Office 365 development? Okay, good. interesting.
Who's actually doing development on SharePoint? Let's do it this way. Half. And who's of you are doing Azure-based implementation, connecting the Office 365 and all of that stuff?
Okay.
The same people almost. Okay. Yeah. And then there's always those who are not in the SharePoint, but they do just Office 365.
Yeah.
Cool.
And who does on-premises only?
Ooh.
Okay. Wow.
For now. So.
Wow. Yes. Time will come. We've put forward some questions, and they are to warm up the crowd and to get us going. And I'll start with the first one. Do you think that the number of SharePoint developers globally is declining, and why? Let's think about that for a second, because part of our job is to breed the community. Gentlemen. Yes.
Yeah. The-
Do you do...
Sorry, Roddy, just to repeat the comment on the...
Yep,
so the, and it's a valid comment. The comment is actually, we're seeing that all the time. You don't have to be a SharePoint developer anymore. You do Angular, you do web stack development on top of the SharePoint, which is absolutely true, which is, by the way, one of the promises of the SharePoint framework as well. So you don't have to have necessarily uber skills on SharePoint feature framework, and probably you shouldn't be using that anymore anyway. But it's kind of an understandable comment.
Yep. Do you believe that a SharePoint project these days, or could be Office 365 for that matter, requires maybe just one person that understands SharePoint natively and everyone else is ASP.NET? Yep. 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 Pretty much. Yep. Exactly. So naturally saying we can even recruit to a broader skill set in order to do the work that we're doing, which do you think that's a good thing?
I think so, because without the
Yeah.
And the comment really is around the fact that you need to either know, in the past it used to be, you need to know either SharePoint or you needed to know the client-side development side. And luckily we are heading now to the direction where it's kind of a combined, which by the way might be super terrifying for the SharePoint developers because that might feel like, hey, I'm devaluing my feature framework XML and ONNET XML knowledge, which by the way I'm a super expert on. So if you have any questions on ONNET XML, trust me, I can answer on that. But that's kind of a past anyway. And I think the new age development and new age SharePoint, the SharePoint online and also on premises in the future, I think it's a good thing. It's also for those who are SharePoint developers because they actually, if they reinvest on now learning this new stuff, they actually can work also more broader. So their skill set is much more broader. And so you can actually then switch on the outside of the SharePoint as well. So not kind of tied into the success of SharePoint, which is a great thing. And, like it wouldn't be successful. Obviously, it will be successful, but still, you can switch between the products as well.
What about the on-premises world? Do you still use pure native web technologies, JavaScript, HTML for on-premises solutions? Yeah. Yeah. Cloud first model. What about other people in this room? Care to share your thoughts and... Yep. Are the challenges related to the APIs that SharePoint exposes? Yeah, context and authentication, yes, of course. Anyone else would like to give input on this topic? That's us.
Still out there, old, yes.
But it's C sharp. And then there's one.
He is not old.
And there's almost different terms. I've been working in SharePoint for 7 years, but on sites and groups, you could never deploy code. So I've been doing front end stuff, you know, since 2000, SharePoint 2003 environments, and doing that, you know, anything, everything's always been front end and using APIs where it was SOAP before and now it's REST now. But there's still, I think, you know, SharePoint developers, it used to be you were a C-sharp developer and then you started to learn SharePoint, and now it's you're a web developer.
Sure.
And you're doing a week of using SharePoint.
Yeah. Okay, shall we move along to the next question?
Yep, sure.
How important is ASP.NET Core support for SharePoint Development or Office 365?
This is an interesting question. How many of you know what is an ASP.NET Core? Yeah, because that's the realities of life as well.
Yeah.
So the reason why Radhi is asking this question is that he's been working on the ASP.NET Core middle layer for SharePoint. But I think that it's the future of the .NET, which is the .NET Core. You can actually talk about that slightly more.
Yeah. So .NET Core is the new version of .NET. It's completely rewritten. It's even written to be cross-platform, which is an interesting twist to everything. ASP.NET Core steps on top of it, again, written from zero, fast, cool, modular, and so on. And this is the future that Microsoft is investing in the server-side development world. Of course, there's lots of investments in JavaScript-based technologies like Node and integration with Node, and of course, Angular, and so on. And from a SharePoint perspective, we would like to know how far ahead of us would this become important. Because at one point in time, the developers that are in this room, the people that we hire and we lead, they will want to use these things and get the benefits that these things give us. That time has not yet come, and we can see that just from the small number of hands that are aware of what ASP.NET Core is. But you actually
mentioned something interesting. I'm going to jump to a side topic because you mentioned that, but you can keep that one over there. You mentioned that Microsoft is heading to the Node.js and open source and all of that stuff. Just out of curiosity, how many of you are terrified with this direction? Because we get a lot of that feedback during the Dev Kitchen. A lot of people were saying Dev Kitchen was the kind of a before we announced the web stack development model for SharePoint Framework, as an example. And that you do development using Yeoman templates and Node.js and all of that. During the Dev Kitchens, there was a lot of feedback that people were like, hey, well, are you seriously moving away from Visual Studio? Which, by the way, we are not. You can still do Visual Studio in the future as well. But the real kind of a high-end tooling, the most up-to-date tooling, is going to be in the on top of Node.js and Yeoman templates and all of that. But is that a massive deal? It's just like, are you freaking out? Or is it like, yeah, okay, this is cool. I'm going to learn this side as well, and that's fine. Because things are obviously evolving, I get that. But anybody want to have any opinions or comments on that? Yes. Because I think, especially if you're a classic Microsoft employee, or if you've been, let's say, doing your career with Microsoft, we used to be completely different. I'm hitting actually 10 years in Microsoft next Tuesday, which is pretty weird for me.
Sad.
But anyway, we used to be completely different. When the times, you actually promised to do developers today. But when we used to do that back in, it was actually in Atlanta. Palmer did that dance, and that was kind of awkward and all of that.
Yeah.
But that was then, at that time, it was just Microsoft. Anything else is evil. Now suddenly we flipped the whole thing. We're like, hey, we're going to do all the stuff, and we're going to be fully open. And Microsoft is the most open and, the company who contributed the most to GitHub, as an example, which is really weird when you think of it. It's not the nature, or it didn't used to be the nature of Microsoft. But it's actually pretty cool if nobody's like freaking out on that. I would say I used to be a consultant on a field in Microsoft before I joined engineering. I always learned that whenever somebody made a decision in Redmond, it's easier to ride along rather than actually trying to fight it because, yeah, they made the decision already, which is a good thing.
Okay, should we move along? Because chasing time?
Yep.
Sure.
Do you agree that our skills must transition into cloud development skills?
You're kind of leading the question.
Yeah. leading questions, yes. How are your developers taking on that? And how do you, or you yourselves, of course, learn about these new skills, which it seems like every month there's something new we have to learn in order to do our job. How is your team and how are you coping with all of that?
Are there any good practices how you're doing that, just out of curiosity? Are you actually having, well, there's always the theory, at least in some companies, there's the public message that, yeah, every Friday is for self-studying, which quite often isn't true. But it used to be the statement in Microsoft that I never had my free Friday either. But how are you dealing with that? How are you, just out of curiosity, because I can imagine that a lot of you are senior people or architects, and you might have a smaller group of developers. So how do you ensure that people are up to date on their skills?
Yeah, I'll start with this, sorry, just so we load balance.
You know, for me, it's just finding those right people to follow on Twitter. And then once you get that kind of stream of the right people with the links, you tend to spend, you know, an hour a day before you go to bed to catch up on all the new tools, which tend to be
So community and social sharing is by far.
And then, you know, after that, you go to the official kind of documentation. But for me, Twitter is,
I think the speed of change, too, is getting hard for people to keep up with. Certainly over for us as SharePoint guys, and not that I'm a developer, so I have to confess, but some of the changes that have been happening in Office 365 around SharePoint, things don't work, and then we come back a fortnight later, and that's been re-implemented again, and that's been, and I know there's been a change that we've been going through, and we're getting hopefully to the end of that, but that's been hard, I guess, for us just to know what's working and what's going to be working, but.
Because we're not being open enough on, I'm just guessing, is this a discussion around the new list and library experience, or, we probably should have been much more open from day one, essentially saying that with what will work and what will not work. So people are much more aware what of their existing customizations will be impacted by that change. And trust me when I'm saying, being involved in those discussions, we learn from that. The backlash is good. And it's actually really good. Whenever you get angry at Microsoft, try to find a proper channel on it. If you get it on the user voice, if you get it on the visible social media channels, that actually helps, trust me, because that will leak into the actual engineering. It will leak down to the right people, and they will then follow up on, they want to follow up on that. So it's really around if you're getting, that is a good example, the new list and library experience. People did a quite big backlash on it, but now we're fixing it. There will be new stuff, there will be new things. We're saying that the parity, we are open and transparent saying the new experience isn't quite there yet. We're saying that it will be there sooner or later, and at that point you can switch over. I do understand that it's the new SharePoint, releasing new capabilities in SharePoint in a way that we do a minimal viable product for something, and then another one and another one, not as a big bang, is a challenging thing as well. Because it's really difficult for messaging for the customers, saying that, hey, all of this cool stuff, yeah, but you can't use it yet because it doesn't support your branding. What do you mean it doesn't support your branding? Well, it's going to support that in a second. So we understand the challenge. We're trying to work on around it, so how we can make it work in the future. And the fact that we have kind of a programs or initiatives like BNP and the people are actually giving the feedback helps a lot. And in the future, the feature groups will use the PNP also for their inspiration and understanding that are people actually using certain customizations. That was a mistake as an example, but we'll address them, so that's all good.
Did you still have something to add? Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I think historically, especially in the SharePoint world, even in the office developer space, it's been very difficult to get information. We used to joke about how there's no documentation and so on. Now it's a different story.
True.
It's a different story, and I think there's a whole bunch of us trying to do our best in. Yeah. Should we take a question from maybe the crowd before we continue? Does anyone have something difficult to ask us about the future of Office 365 development? Yes. Thank you. Lots of it. There's a community version of it. No, but you're touching a topic that's very close to my heart, and I focus on authentication side and authorization of those things. The fact of the matter is that the way, at least I feel it, and I think that's the community sense, is everything is invested in the cloud segment, the whatever's in Azure and whatever's in Office 365. And Microsoft is pushing to get that story right. And all other products are being affected by decisions made in that layer. Just like you, everyone else has to, whenever we do work, have to decide whether we're going to deploy it as a SharePoint add-in and use the SharePoint add-in mechanism to authenticate. And if it's with online, it's ACS. If it's on-premises, it's with server-to-server. And decide to use it as an Azure app that has access to Office 365 resources as part of the tenant ecosystem. And both options have different deployment challenges, deployment processes, maybe even different people were involved in the deployment of those, and there's definitely different governance considerations when you deploy that in a larger scale client. The official message from Microsoft is to lean towards Azure apps and give them access. However, in some cases, that is not enough and doesn't give you that granularity. I guess the roles and responsibilities and deployment steps aspect is something that can be easily solvable by process. However, the lack of functional capabilities is something that do. And I believe the public message is stick with the Azure AD paradigm of authentication, follow what Azure AD team is doing and the ADEL library and what they give us, the Graph API, which is essentially a lot of investment, and base your decisions on the motions that happen with that within that spectrum. That is the community answer, and I hope it's aligned with yours.
That's aligned, so that's fine. And then, right now we have a challenge with SharePoint. When you have something running in SharePoint, it uses a slightly different authorization scheme than in Azure AD.
Yeah.
So if you try to access an application in Azure, you need to actually re-authenticate, and that's a pain. Just to add on what you were saying, we are working on that one, so that pain should go away. When that's a debatable, and we're not going to, anyway, we're never going to say you at exact schedule because we don't want to promise you a date because you will get back to us if we don't hit the date. So, but we're working on it, so the authentication model should be more aligned as well. Because at that point, it really doesn't matter is it a SharePoint hosted, provider hosted add-in, or is it an Azure application? Because as long as the authentication flies over seamlessly, we're in good stage.
The gentleman there had a question or comment.
Yep.
Able to have them up in the app launcher, those things. And you end up that for
Yeah, and you're referring to the fact that right now they're in an iframe, right? So it's like... Yes.
So
yes.
From some browsers, actually, we can make it work.
Yes. But that's only with that particular browser. Yes, I get that. So so the SharePoint framework itself is really targeted also to address that. And what we mean with that one, that you are no longer forced to deploy add-ins which are isolated in an iframe. Now, what it means for ISVs, however, we need to wait slightly longer, because right now the SharePoint framework, it requires that the initial version, that the client web parts are getting activated by a tenant administrator. So we don't have a story on the store immediately from a day one, because we don't know how to right now. Well, we have plans how to do that, but we don't have it in the queue immediately. But that's really around the fact that you're able to then take full ownership of the UI. You're not in the iframe. You can actually do additional control on the pages. The new portal experiences, I think we mentioned that they're coming in next year in SharePoint Online and also in on-premises. They will take, as an example, advantage of SharePoint framework. And if you need to do a full UI mockups or do smaller things here and there, like in your case, you can do that in the future as well. But we're in a kind of a transition time frame with SharePoint at the moment. We're in a nasty situation where we can kind of see where we're heading, and even you guys can see from our presentations that, oh, that looks pretty cool, but then I have my day job. Now I need to do something for 6 months or 1 year still with this old stuff, and we're in this kind of a nasty hybrid mode. And it is a pain, I get that. We need to be patient. It is coming. I'm waiting that in a year from now, if we have Ignite, that's going to be amazing, because everything will be hopefully already in the modern experiences.
Yes, question.
So what's the future for form-based
SharePoint? Well, pretty much answers the question.
Well, so the form-based customizations in Office 365. So we do have the new capabilities, the Flow and Power Apps and all of this stuff coming. They are in the previous states right now. Well, they're not in previous states, but they're first versions of the capabilities. And if you compare that to the classic, let's say, InfoPath, you were able to do much more. The InfoMath was a surprisingly powerful tool and a surprisingly powerful thing, but it was really a legacy technology. And we needed to let it go because it was basically impossible to make it responsive and all of that. Right now, with that one as well, we're in this transition stage. The new products and new services which are in SharePoint Online do not yet fulfill the exact same capabilities as in InfoPath. But we are aware of that gap as well, and we're trying to make and gain that gap as fast as possible.
I would also like to stress, the on-premises gap is even bigger, because all of those require internet connectivity and cross-boundary interaction, and sometimes it's difficult, especially if you need to exchange data from outbound premise to on-premise.
Sure.
Sorry
sure.
to interrupt you.
We showed something, yes,
yeah.
A while back.
This year it's Power Apps.
From a community perspective, what you're saying is exactly, it looks like there is no global vision and no true answer. At least if we had a vision, maybe in the next 3 years we'll create this awesome thing that you could do, then it's a story, but we don't have that.
Yeah, so, that really comes down on the new way of how we do stuff in Microsoft, unfortunately, which is that we try to, we do minimal viable products, we test the concepts, we get the feedback in, maybe people didn't like that. The InfoPath story is especially kind of nasty, because we've been trying to explain that story for years now. We showed something back in Build or Ignite in Chicago, and then we went back and said, yeah, that's not actually it. At the same time, we need to be realistic. Even if we are Microsoft who are providing this, we do not have an infinite resources. And that's why we need to kind of a balance between the what are we actually doing. We do a minimal viable product, and we get bad feedback on it. Maybe we'll drop that one and try to actually rebuild the whole thing with the proper way. It's a completely different mindset when we were releasing products in every single 3 years, because we essentially we did specs, we decide this is it, then we went live, and then we took the feedback in, and maybe in the following version we deprecated something. But that's what you guys are seeing, and that's also unfortunately that's part of the generation of the way we work right now in SharePoint Online. But at the same time, it's a good thing, because what we want to do is not wait for you to be forced to wait 3 years to see what's actually coming. You get a glimpse on what's coming. Hey, and that's promising. And if people are catching up on the new stuff, then that starts growing. But then look, every single time somebody is looking for a, let's say, a strong three-year roadmap, the answer is that we have a vision, but do we have locked down exact steps for what it will be? Answer is no. We are adjusting as we go, like we need to nowadays within this ever-changing community of an ever-changing competition as well.
So the answer is no.
So the yes. Yeah. I'm an ex-consultant, so I can...
And I'm an architect. It depends.
Yes.
Okay. Any next question?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Either way.
Okay, left first. My left.
I understand that the answer is don't do that. And how I would, let's say, phrase the answer is that we learn from the past mistakes. We do understand in Microsoft that we can't just make a funky decision by people sitting in Redmond without understanding how much is being actually used. We've done some of those decisions in the past. I'm being fully transparent and honest, like I usually am. Hopefully nobody's listening to this recording. I'm just kidding, but we've done some mistakes in the past, no doubt, and we learned from them. The key point is that one of the things what we've been addressing, especially in SharePoint Online, because the on-prem is kind of isolated, is that we have much better metrics. So we are actually collecting much more data on the used APIs and how much stuff is being used. So we know exactly how many tenants would be impacted, how many customers are impacted, who are those customers who would be impacted if we would pull down some feature. And Sandbox Solution was a, how would I put it? It was a nasty story, and I can't say anything more than apologize on the messaging mistakes on that one. But we still were able to identify which of the tenants are using, then how much they're used. We have all of that statistics nowadays internally. In the past, we didn't have that. So we have much more knowledge on making valid decisions. And we also we are much more engaged with the community in general. So whenever we do something, we actually ask you to give us feedback as well. So I'm kind of saying, yes, I cannot promise that it won't happen, but we are much more educated and experienced of trying to ensure that that won't happen in the future. Specifically for adding models or remote event receivers, we're not going to take them away. They are a fundamental part of the existing models. There are thousands of customers who are using them in SharePoint Online and in on-prem. It would be absolutely stupid for Microsoft to actually go and get that feature away. The webhooks and SharePoint framework, they're additive. At some point, maybe in 5 years or 4 years, where if people are adapting the new technologies, then we start maybe reducing some of the old package, because we need to do that as well. But we've learned, let's put it this way. So,
yeah. And you had a question?
Of
So I've got the same problems. Exactly 5% is probably the fail rate on site collection creation, especially when it's bulk. And when you have a client with 1,000 of them, so 5% is not a small number. Maybe you can talk about the reasoning, but I can tell you what we try to do. So we try to manage the state of that provisioning cycle, and step zero is purely on the framework end of things. And if step zero fails, you have to delete the site collection, they have to go to the recycle bin, clean up the recycle bin, and then recreate it. Our solutions are mostly based on the provisioning engine of PNP, and of course the partner pack gives you some insight around that, but that's what we do. We basically capture the state and the actions. If it fails, we have mechanisms to detect after X amount of time whether it's failed, and then we just recreate that thing. It's not an ideal solution, but that's what we do.
And then I'm going to do the promise of the future again on this one. So how would I, for the past year or 2 years, we've been having significant issues with site provisioning. We've been chatting that with Oliver also in the Yammer and privately and all of that, and with a lot of you guys as well. There has been a lot of involvement on the site collection provisioning and how it will be done or how it's done right now in SharePoint Online. We are changing that significantly with the new sites and with the new site provisioning model, or the new model in the back end. It's not going to actually be, it's going to be completely seamless for you guys, but we're working on getting it actually fixed. For the past few months, you might have heard about in the PNP, we actually have this test automation sites where you can go and have a look on our automated tests and how they're resolving. And they are also provisioning site collections. We've been able to catch quite a lot of, let's say, bugs which were planning to go to the production with that automation before it went, because we use the same tool for eDoc as in the pre-production farms before it's even visible in the fast track for the first release. So there has been a lot of changes, there has been a lot of polishing, there has been a lot of optimization on that side, but the real full refactoring of the code is happening right now. So we're looking into having site collections created in less than 5 seconds. And that's a massive promise when you think of it. Right now, it can be up to 15 minutes or 20 minutes even if it creates the site collection, or then it fails. But with this one as well, I can promise that the problem is well known. And it's a fundamental part of SharePoint. It should not fail, never, ever. And we are aware of that, and we're trying to fix it, absolutely.
Yeah. We've got about 7 minutes.
Okay.
Let's take another question from the crowd, maybe. Yes? Yes?
So now that the online and on-premise merge, right, I guess we'll be able to test the on-premise
The comment was around online and on-prem merged, and the answer is not precisely. The SharePoint 2016 is from the code base of SharePoint Online, but there is a fork which happened already like months and months before. And the problem is that a lot of these modern ways and more reliable ways what we do can only be done in a SharePoint Online due to the fundamental infrastructure which is available through Azure and all of that, which we're taking advantage. In on-prem, we cannot rely on that. So whenever we introduce some of these changes, it's always, we need to always balance that can we do that in on-prem still or not. We're targeting to do that in on-prem as well, but we can't, there are many times when we can't do that. Site provisioning, as an example, works completely differently in SharePoint Online than it works in on-prem. I don't know the fail rate for between these, but the back-end system is completely different, unfortunately. The 5 second thing is going to happen in SharePoint Online, and we probably, well, some of it might actually land in the on premises, which we can take to the on premises. But there is a separate team. I have a session actually on site provisioning with John Squires. John Squire actually owns the site provisioning this afternoon. We're going to talk about the current, the PNP, and the future on that session as well. And I think he will promise the 5 seconds during that session, which I seem to be promising now, but that's fine. Yes. But he has good statistics on the site provisioning and what are we planning to do. And Sean absolutely understands the pain of the field as well.
Yeah. You did have a question for us.
Yeah. Building on the site provisioning question, now that the team sites are rooms and groups are team sites, planner and all that stuff.
Yeah.
True. So in the future, when you create a SharePoint site, you will get a group, or you will create a group, you will get a SharePoint site. So, but I would say it has been announced. It's not yet directly available immediately. So the objective in the longer run, and I think we're going to talk about this one in the afternoon as well, is to create a group even though you're creating a SharePoint site, regardless how do you actually create the SharePoint site. So you can actually create SharePoint site using the API, and you will get a group, which makes a lot of sense. They're finally kind of merging together, because everybody has been super kind of a, what is the difference? Now, the modern experience is then another dimension of that discussion, which is that, okay, if I need to apply branding on that SharePoint site, if it's a modern SharePoint site, the supported branding techniques are much more limited than it is actually in the classic SharePoint sites. But those sites fundamentally still are SharePoint sites. So you're able to create content types, lists, libraries, all of that stuff is still there. Right now, the modern experience is really the UX experience. We're not going to switch the underlying technologies. The modern experience is, from a branding perspective, as an example, that work is still in progress. So we haven't actually gone public and say, what is going to be the branding story around the modern theme sites / groups in the future. There will be more announcements on that whenever that is falling closer to the dev preview or preview usage. But right now, the answer is keep on using BNP. We'll help you to bridge the future. But especially now that the BNP provisioning engine is owned by the engineering, we have the right connections. They actually use the BNP provisioning engine as the inspiration for their future as well. It won't be that engine by default as such, because it doesn't make any sense. There's multiple scenarios where it doesn't make any sense, but it will be much faster native support at some point in the natively in SharePoint Online.
Gentlemen, there had a comment.
Okay. And we'll bridge the gap for you. Kind of concern, and people are like, hey, what's happening? But we'll help with that story. Yes. I got this question in the booth for 3 times yesterday. So must have been your friends. No, probably people are using that. But you are pretty much correct. Right now, the SharePoint Designer, well, obviously, you can modify still the sites with the SharePoint Designer. You do want to do that. That's debatable, because I strongly advised against that from day one. Because people, when they have too much access using SharePoint Designer. But the valid use case for SharePoint Designer, or they might have too much access if they are not trained, let's put it this way. The proper use case is still the workflow. You're absolutely correct on that. And I don't underlying reasons and the background reason, but that theoretically could be the reason why it's still completely supported to use that in SharePoint Online. Because we don't want to actually disconnect and remove that capability. Now, the future of workflow in the workflow, I think we mentioned that openly in our communications. We haven't actually invested significantly on it. Fully supported, it's not deprecated, but we're looking into providing alternative options as well. For the time being, those alternative options are not feature parity between the workflows. So we can't actually seriously go and say, switch from a workflow to Power Apps or Flow or whatever, because that's like, yeah, I can't do that. So whenever that's the feature parities will be there, then there might be announcements on, let's say, maybe you should be switching over, maybe not. But I'm not aware of any decisions, and we're not going to actually communicate, or there's no plans to communicate any deprecations at this point.
You can still buy it off for $99.
What's that?
You can still buy SharePoint Designer from Amazon.
For $0, $99. Yes.
Yeah. $99, you can. There is an SKU that you can pay for.
What?
Yep, still. Trust me, just go to Amazon, find it. We're out of time, so very quickly, what tips would you give first from a community perspective to breed a better community, and then from a product perspective to allow the development community to grow and succeed? Quick.
How long?
Quick.
So, with the explosion of stuff in Azure, web jobs and all that stuff.
network is great and coding is great, but from an architecture point of view, there's very little guidance. You know, when do you use functions? When do you use sites and all that stuff?
Yeah, and samples of integration. Cool. Okay, got your point. Cool. Anyone else?
What's missing? Well, how can we help you to make your job easier? That's really the question.
Or your life better.
Or your life better at the same time. Related on work, please.
If no one says anything, then we're doing a good job.
And providing the client-side rendering for the modern lists and libraries. I think we actually promised to do that in the pre-Tuesday session. So Lincoln Demaris, who owns that functionality, has promised that we'll make it happen. What about from a community perspective? What do you need? Samples was a good thing, and more kind
guidance.
Of overall thinking around that. So when it would do what?
Yeah. We're out of time.
Yeah. Best practices. Okay. Cool.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Cool. That was informal, but thank you for joining. So
you can find us at the PNP booth, which is under Office Developer Fabric booth. So we're around.